Please turn back with me to Genesis 31 as we finish our reading of this chapter together. Genesis 31, picking up at verse 33. Jacob has just promised that anyone found with his uncle Laban's gods shall be put to death, entirely unaware that his beloved wife Rachel has stolen these gods herself. This is a moment of intense drama. Verse 33. So Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two female servants, but he did not find them. And he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's. Now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. Laban felt all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, "Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the way of women is upon me." So he searched, but did not find the household gods. Then Jacob became angry and berated Laban. Jacob said to Laban, "What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? For you have felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household gods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flocks. What was torn by wild beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the cold by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you for 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." Then Laban answered and said to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these my daughters, or for their children whom they have borne? Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Laban called it Jegar Shadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." Therefore he named it Galeed and Mizpah, for he said, "The Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives beside my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." Then Laban said to Jacob, See this heap and the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me, to do harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac, and Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. They ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. Early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned home. Amen. Many of us will know of people who made the brave decision to up sticks and move to another country. with more often than not Australia or New Zealand being the destination. And quite often the intention is to go for a few months, maybe a few years, a change of scene, recharge the batteries, better job prospects perhaps. And of course, what tends to happen is that they end up staying. Life is good. The weather is better. Perhaps they marry out there. Family connections. Perhaps financially things are much improved for them. And they begin to put down roots. They begin to settle down. Perhaps you can think of people having done exactly that. This evening, we see the very same thing happening to Jacob. If you've been following with us in these studies through his life together, back in chapter 8, 28, you will remember, he left his homeland, chapter 28, to travel to the land of Haran. He left a messy situation in the hope of better prospects. And it wasn't his idea, really, it was his mother's. And that, this is back, chapter 27 now, verse 43. She says, "Arise, Jacob, flee to Laban, my brother in Haran, and stay with him a while. Go to your uncle Laban for a while." And what was intended to be a while has turned out to be 20 years. And after a slow, difficult start, in later years, Jacob has begun to do quite well for himself. Through his cunning, he's worked a system of getting rich at the expense of his uncle. His herd of flocks is growing while his uncle's is diminishing. Jacob is getting richer and richer. His uncle Laban is getting poorer and poorer. And of course, as we thought last week, this is all the blessing of God in Jacob's life. Things are starting to look up for this man. In chapter 30, verse 43, the very last verse of the chapter, it tells us he increased greatly. He had large flocks, female servants and male servants, and camels and donkeys. The thing is, Jacob is beginning to settle down. Where he thought about returning home halfway through chapter 30, it seems that he changed his mind. Chapter 30, verse 31 tells us that he was speaking to his uncle Laban, and he says, "If you give me these certain types of animals, if you give me these wages, I'll stay, Laban. I will again pasture your flock and keep it." He's settling down. It seems he's putting down roots. And although that's no big problem when it comes to Australia or New Zealand, this is a problem for Jacob. Because Jacob is becoming less and less what he should be. He's becoming more and more what he should not be. He's losing the cutting edge of his life spiritually. He's not the man of God he's been called to be. And the time has come now, in chapter 31, for Jacob to return. Not only to his homeland, but to return to his God. Returning to God. And you could be here this evening, and you could be in exactly the same kind of situation. Perhaps you're not this evening the man, woman, young person you should be. Perhaps you've lost the cutting edge of your spiritual life. Perhaps this evening you are wandering down the garden path of some secret sin. And it is time, my friend, to return to the Lord. We want to see three things from this large chapter this evening. Firstly, called to return. Called to return. Verses 1 through 21. 1 to 21. And God here is so gracious to Jacob. Out of his love and mercy and kindness, God comes to Jacob, verse 3, and calls him out of the grip that the world is having on Jacob. Verse 3, the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you." This is a clear, unmistakable command. It's not a suggestion, it's a command from the Lord. Arise, Jacob. Return. Leave this land. Leave this way. Leave this culture. And return. And isn't that how the Christian life begins for every believer? There's a call from God. The call of the gospel upon your heart to turn, arise, turn, and follow after Christ. And having turned and followed him, that's the call of the gospel upon your life every single day. Return to the Lord. Maybe you're here this evening and you've been spending days, months, wandering away from the Lord. Backsliding, you might call it. Playing around with some sin. Scooping the fire of sin into your lap. And the voice of God comes to you very clearly this evening. Return. Return. Go back. You have lost your first love. Arise, turn back to Christ. Now, it wasn't going to be easy for Jacob to get up and return. He was beginning to get quite comfortable. It would involve a fair bit of hassle. He's a large family now, doesn't he? Lots of animals, lots of possessions. To travel a journey of 500 miles. Have you ever moved house? You haven't had to move as much stuff as Jacob. It would be very difficult. And the call of God upon a life does ask difficult things. It does involve great upheaval in a life. It's not always easy to leave behind the ways of the world. But look at how God encourages Jacob. He not only commands him to return, but there's encouragements here. For one thing, Jacob has overheard his brothers-in-law. There's the real potential of things turning nasty in Haran. This is verses 1 and 2. Jacob heard the sons of Laban saying to each other, "Jacob has taken all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he's gained all this wealth." And Jacob saw that Laban did not regard him with favor as before. So here's one factor that's pushing him to obey God's call to return. But another factor is his wives, Rachel and Leah. How will these two homebirds respond to the idea of leaving their homeland, leaving their family, leaving their father, traveling to Jacob's homeland? Will they even agree about traveling together? They don't get on one bit, these women. Well, God has obviously been working in their hearts. Jacob calls them out to the field, verse 4. Really, that's a place of privacy in the culture. In a land of tents, there was no privacy. So for privacy, you had to go outside into the wide open space. He puts the case to them, verses 4 to 13. And look at their response in verse 16. At the end of verse 16, "Now then, Jacob, whatever God has said to you, do." Now, isn't that tremendous? I was very close to preaching on just that little verse this evening. There's plenty there for us to think about. Whatever God has said to you, do. Here's these women, they're not only willing to go, leave their father, but they're encouraging Jacob to obey and go. And can you see God providing these two factors to Jacob? The angry brothers-in-law and the willing wives, and they're both encouraging him. And God sometimes works that way with us. We're living our lives and we're so easily getting stuck in the sin of this world and we're straying from the Lord, and suddenly, as if a light is switched on in our lives, or as if we overhear a conversation, suddenly we realize what a rotten place our Haran is. Suddenly we realize that sin and Satan and the world, they don't actually want what's best for us. Or another child of God comes alongside us and encourages us to go back and tells us what we're doing is wrong and encourages us to follow after and walk with the Lord. Can you see? God doesn't only command us, call us to return, but he gives us these encouragements to obey and return. All the same, it's still pretty hard for Jacob. What is he returning to? Remember why he left in the first place. He's got his brother, his twin brother Esau, who is literally out to get him. Esau, who was an expert tracker and a skilled hunter, and he's planning to kill Jacob. And don't forget a blind father that Jacob had deceived and tricked. Jacob, I would think, has every reason to be terrified about returning. How on earth, God, could I ever go back? How on earth could I ever be accepted again? And isn't that so often the thought process of a backsliding Christian? How on earth, how could I go back? How would I ever be accepted? But listen. Listen to the promise of God in verse 3. He doesn't just command here, but there's a wonderful promise. Return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. I will be with you. And that's what God says to you this evening. The call of the gospel, it is demanding. It does demand so much of a life. And perhaps God is calling you to do something very difficult. To leave a long-standing relationship or to depart from a very familiar sin. It will be difficult and it will hurt. You'll wonder how you could do it. You might wonder how you could ever be accepted back by God. I will be with you, he says. I will help you to return. And Jacob, by all this encouragement, he gets up and he obeys God's call. Verse 17, he arose, set his sons and wives and camels, and he heads off. Happy days. Straightforward, plain sailing, not quite. The chapter doesn't end there. The second thing we see, tempted to remain, verses 22 to 30. Tempted to remain. He's been called to return, but now he's tempted to remain because his uncle Laban is rather peeved at the way Jacob has just up and left. He's lost a valuable asset to the farm. He's lost daughters and grandchildren with this move. Furious, he sets out after Jacob. After 7 days, he catches up. He's angry. Laban has an army with him. But before he meets with Jacob, God in his grace intervenes and protects Jacob. And this is worth seeing, friends. Verse 24. God came to Laban in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad." Here's God speaking against Laban. Here's God restricting Laban, restraining Laban, holding back the hand of Laban. But do you see his merciful protection here? God protecting Jacob. Laban wasn't a believer. But God was overruling him. And God overrules for us. He wonderfully looks after his children. And he has our Labans, so to speak, tightly on a leash. Satan and all his enemy and all his allies, God has tightly on a leash. God's in control. Nonetheless, Laban has Jacob cornered. He says some pretty hard things against Jacob. Look at the load of rubbish Laban comes out with. This man is a compulsive liar. And these are the kind of things the world would say to a young Christian, or to any Christian for that matter. When you become a Christian, you've got to realize the world won't easily give you up. And Satan won't easily give you up. Like Jacob, you'll be pursued. And so verse 27, you'll be asked the question like, why did you leave us like that? We could have talked this through. Things would have been okay. Or you could be offered the false promise of verse 27 as well. Look, we would have thrown a going away party for you. We care for you. We have great affection for you. There's the accusation of verse 28. Well, you owe us, remember. Look at all we have given you. Where's your gratitude? Or there's the veiled threat of verse 29. It's in my power to do you harm, Laban says, when it wasn't in his power at all. Friends, Satan and the world, your unconverted friends, they'll use all these tactics. Even the sneering of verse 30 as well. You've gone away, Jacob, because you long greatly for your father's house. You poor little daddy's boy, Jacob. And they'll find something just to sneer at you. Or they'll fire the rebuke which really hurts, verse 30. Why did you steal my gods? Now, Rachel has stolen her father's household gods. These idols, she's packed them up in her luggage. She wanted to leave, but she didn't want to leave the worship. She's carrying a secret idol. Friends, could the world say to you this evening, you're carrying a secret idol. You've a secret sin, haven't you? And you love what we love, except you don't do it publicly. Could the world say to you, you love what we love, but you don't actually announce it. It's hidden away in your heart, an affection for the things we love openly. When the world can say that to a believer, it is a sore rebuke. In this case, Jacob doesn't know anything about it, but it was his wife. It was in his home. It was under his roof. And he's rebuked by the world. What kind of follower are you with these secret idols? I trust you can see the applications. If you're a Christian this evening, you'll know that as you seek to obey God and follow after him, your old master rises up against you. And when you're seeking to follow after Christ, the devil will throw the kitchen sink at you. And he doesn't want to lose you, you see. He wants to discourage you. He wants to ruin you. He wants to put everything in your way. And you will be tempted. You will be tempted to remain where you are. And you must expect this kind of opposition. But you must also remember that God has your old master on a lead. Revelation 20 speaks of how Satan is chained up. He can go thus far and no further. So you've been called to return. You will be tempted to remain. Are you left to fight on your own devices? Not quite. Our third thing this evening. Enabled to resist. Enabled to resist. Verses 31 to 55. This accusation from Laban, it really gets Jacob's goat, as you might say. He hasn't a clue. He hasn't a clue Rachel has stolen these gods. And so he rashly promises Laban, if you find these gods anywhere, whoever has them shall be put to death, Laban. And of course, you can cut the atmosphere with a knife. Verse 33 describes in great drama how Laban goes through tent by tent, eventually into Rachel's tent. Is he going to find the idols? He feels all around the tent. There's Rachel sitting there. She apologizes for not getting up. It's her time of the month. And of course, Laban doesn't ask any questions. He leaves the tent, and lo and behold, Rachel is sitting on Laban's pathetic little gods. Verse 36 describes how annoyed Jacob is over this accusation, and he stands up with righteous anger. It's as if 20 years of pent-up frustration just bubble out. And he is so angry with Laban. What's this all about? What's this little God incident all about? It's as if, I think, it's as if there's a contrast made between Jacob's God and Laban's God. Jacob speaks in verse 42 in this unburdening himself of all his anger. He says, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, so if the one true God had not been on my side, surely you would have sent me away empty-handed. Jacob speaks of his God watching over him, his God being on Jacob's side, his God seeing Jacob's affliction. What about Laban's gods? They could be stolen. They could be hidden. They could be sat upon. And they couldn't speak a word. And it couldn't be clearer. The true God here is Jacob's God. The one watching over Jacob. Strengthening him. Enabling him. And verse 44, wicked Laban realizes what he's done. In an act of desperation, he wants to make a covenant. This is damage limitation now. Let's make an agreement, Jacob, a treaty of some kind. And in fact, both the men are very suspicious of each other, so they agree. They go through all the ritual of the covenant and setting up the stones as witnesses and so on. It's a sort of a truce here, and they part in peace. Laban going back, Jacob going forwards. Returning to God, the God who's been watching over him and keeping him. And Jacob is enabled to resist his old master's schemes. We need to see that. Jacob is enabled to resist his old master's schemes. And he's strengthened by God to keep going. And that's the secret. That's the secret. The secret of returning to God isn't to pull up your socks and try harder. Rather, it's looking to God, to what He has done, looking to God for strength to keep going. Whether we're thinking of starting the Christian life, or whether we're thinking of giving up the Christian life, or whether we're nearing the end of the Christian life, or whether we're needing to return to the Christian life, the secret is God giving the strength. God giving the strength to resist temptation and to walk with Him. Arise, He says. Return to your heavenly Father. Stop messing about in Haran. Stop settling down in this world. They are not out to look after you. Stop assimilating. Stop becoming like the people around you. Return to God. And return every day. And thank Him for sending Jesus to come and save people like Jacob. Thank Him that He sent Jesus to defeat our Labans. And thanks to Christ's work on the cross, Satan has no real hold over us. Because of Christ, we're able to return to the Lord. and were able to resist the cunning schemes of the evil one. Because of Christ, we can heed the words of Rachel and Leah back in verse 16. Whatever God has said to you, do. We've been called to return. We will be tempted to remain. But because of Christ, we can be enabled to resist. Perhaps our final words belong to another wandering son. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven, and before you I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him." Amen.